Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
Oh, this young man is a sensation! Dele Alli, out of League One, into the Premier League! Oh, what a goal! It's Danny Rose on his Premier League debut!
Sheringham flick, and Klinsmann is in!
He's got it lost under his feet, and it's come from the middle!
Welcome back to another edition of the Internet's most dangerous Tottenham Hotspur podcast. It's Wheeler Dealer Radio. In addition to our danger, we are frequently inebriated while we record this podcast, which I think makes us ideally suited to talk about Spurs' most recent game against Newcastle United. Before I get into that, don't forget to follow us on Twitter at WDR Podcast. That's WDR as in Wheeler Dealer Radio. And leave us a nice 5-star review on iTunes or Spotify. Shouldn't a good thing happen to a Spurs fan this week? Because nothing has so far. So anyway, putting that aside, let's get to my co-host. Coming up first, as always, from the mean streets of Miami, planning some horse-related shenanigans in revenge for our game this weekend, it's Brian Ashlock. Brian, how are you doing this fine weeknight?
I'm great. And look, horses just shouldn't be trusted, all right? That's all I'm saying is, you know, look, their eyes, right? They're just dead. They have dead eyes. And, like, what are they doing? Like, what are they doing? That's a great question. And I think until they answer that we should be considering punching them.
Yeah, I mean, you make a good case.
Yeah, right?
The prosecution, like, rests, Your Honor.
End of, right?
This is the kind of double black diamond legal arguments you get from our friend Brian. And next up, coming back to us from a short holiday away, presumably to, you know, a film festival that involves something where a homeless guy was actually Jesus. I don't know. I'm just spitballing here. It's Ben Daniels. Ben, welcome back.
All right, I may be Jewish, but wasn't Jesus kind of a homeless guy, like, as
no,
is?
I just,
like, isn't that sort of the story?
I just assume that any independent movie has a sloppy Jesus metaphor with, you know, transpose him into modern day life. That's what I'm getting for. It's a very, very narrow, you know, it's very elevated sense of humor we have on this podcast.
Yeah, super elevated after my horse bit.
Yeah, I don't know.
Should we start over again?
No. I think this is great.
This is great. This is on brand. This is what we need.
Oh, so how you doing, Ben?
Yeah, I'm good.
See any good movies while you're away from Spurs?
Yeah, I watched this French crime procedural or courtroom procedural called Anatomy of a Foal. That's about a man who punches a horse to death, maybe, or maybe the horse fell. And, you know, we got to go through the courtroom procedures to see what really happened.
Or maybe, is it really about an Australian football manager's time at a North London football club? Is that what it was about?
I don't think that was it. No, that was a different one.
Right. I hope not. So, yeah, we have a game that's probably more painful to talk about than what you just listened to this week, and that is our 4-0 loss against Newcastle United. Boy, that got ugly in a hurry. We've talked about this a lot in recent weeks about how I think Spurs have been a little chicken little about this team and exaggerating issues we've had when you consider where we are in the sort of development process, what's been going on with the team in terms of injuries or guys coming back from injuries or guys who are just out of form. And, you know, just shit happens sometimes. I think a lot of these games, the panic has been much ado about nothing. This, I think, is the well, I think those things all hold true. This is the first game that really gave me pause in the sort of second half of the season. Ben, you've been without us for a few weeks. We've been without you.
I've been without you. No. You're right.
You can't smile without us, Ben, can you?
Yeah.
That's right.
What was your takeaway from this match?
I mean, I think you're both right that the, you know, problems are maybe being overblown, but I think the problems are also real. And I'm just not sure how much at this stage in the season I care. It's just going to be a matter of, can we fix them? You know, I mean, we know what our strengths are. We know what our weaknesses are. We've seen almost an entire season of Ange Ball. I think it's pretty clear where the kinks need to be worked out. I think, you know, when we get found out bad. And when we can't execute the way we're supposed to, we struggle and we don't score an early goal, you know, and teams are able to sit back on us. It's hard. And yeah, I mean, I think Newcastle played us very well. I think a lot's been written and podcasted already about, you know, the various tactical shenanigans that they employed. But yeah, I mean, we play a very specific style of football. And if you can keep things tight at the back and hassle us in possession, we're going to make mistakes and we're not going to be super creative to unpick that, you know, that packed in back line. And, you know, that's what happened four times. So, yeah, it sucked.
I don't know if it's the biggest problem with where Spurs are right now, but it's what I find most annoying. And it's not universally true, but when a team sort of figures us out, that it generally turns into a, you know, sort of just a dump trucking as opposed to like a bad day at the office, which again, isn't always true. I think the Wolves game is an example of a team that came in with a good game plan, figured us out, and was also fairly lucky to win that game. Like they were very, I think Wolves was very lucky that they scored the goals they did. They were very lucky we did not score more goals against them. I think it speaks to how hard it is to play this way against us. But as other people have noted, you know, more teams seem to be figuring this out. Luton tried to do this to us. It didn't work because they're Luton. And probably because we were having a better day. But like, you know, Fulham and this game in particular are the ones that I'm thinking of where it's just like, it's just exhausting to like, just see it go so pear-shaped, you know, where it just feels like, because I feel like we've all, every fan of every football team has watched their team like not play well, but still like be in the game. Both like these games feel like by the 60th minute, they're out of reach, which, you know, maybe they're not, but it feels that way. And it's like, you know, like, God, if like we're going to lose, could they at least keep it at 2-0 with where it feels like we have a chance until the very end? Brian, what was your takeaway from all this nonsense?
I just think like the annoying thing is that like every loss or like poor game turns into like this weird analysis of whether Ange Postecoglou and his system can work at the, like it, instead of like, oh, Tottenham played bad, it's, oh my God, Ange Postecoglou has been found out. Like his Spurs team is like, you know, now teams have solved this and et cetera, et cetera. And it's just like, you know, how do you control for Mickey Van de Ven forgetting how to stand up? Like, how do you control for, you know, just a bad day at the office? And certainly I understand, you know, what you were saying, Greg, about how, like, you know, it doesn't have to turn into this absolute shellacking. But, you know, I think my thing is like, this is not the finished article on this team. And like, you know, obviously this game is bad. Like the performance was bad. We played bad. Like Newcastle had a good system and a good approach to it. And we just didn't do anything to adapt. But like, that doesn't mean that Ange and his system and Spurs have been solved. You know what I mean? Like, you know, what we see right now in game 32 of the Premier League season is not what we're going to see in game 2 of the Premier League season next year. And, you know, I think a lot of the analysis after this game has been focused on how Newcastle have solved Spurs and like, there's no going back now. And that's just not the case. Like, we get so invested in these individual performances and micro analyzing every single thing that we just lose track of the bigger picture, which is like, we've been mostly fine all year. And like, yeah, we've had some blips, but like, we're in the first season under a new manager. We're rebuilding. Like we sold our best player in the summer. Like, you know, I just think a lot of the hand wringing is way overblown.
I think the hand wringing is overblown, and I don't think Newcastle solved Spurs, but I think what this game did was put our weaknesses under a microscope and, you know, really force us to take a look at what do we do badly and how is Newcastle able to take advantage of that? And then also, we've seen us attack well, and we've seen us score a lot of goals, and they were able to nullify that. And the ways in which they were able to do that, I think, don't mean that, you know, we've been solved. I think it's a hard thing to do what Newcastle did, but it does point to some limitations that I think we have seen before and we'll see again and need to, you know, have fixed. I have talked a lot every week lately about my frustrations with our buildup process and the way the inverted fullbacks compress space in midfield, and we struggle to make those initial passes from the center backs into our defensive midfielder and fullbacks to build up effectively. And Newcastle did a fantastic job of cutting off the supply lines and preventing us from building the way that we want to. You know, and it's a thing that, you know, we struggle with because of a lack of press resistance, a lack of passing ability. You know, there's a lot of technical issues, I think, with maybe the personnel. But if we don't fix those personnel, those problems are going to remain, and it's going to remain a problem, I think. You know, I think we all see we're at our best when we get the ball up the pitch quickly and we get Brennan and Timo isolating guys and just breaking into the byline and getting that ball across. And that's when we're most effective. But if teams can stop us from doing that, we don't seem to have a lot of other tricks up our sleeve. And James Maddison has been, I don't want to, you know, blame him specifically, but he was such an important creative fulcrum to doing other things earlier on in the season, and he just hasn't been that same player. And so the question is can we find other ways to replicate that? Can we recreate him in the aggregate? Will he get better, you know, after a rest? Those are real questions that I think this game means we have to answer.
I think, Ben, that point's well taken, and I think something that's really under-discussed with Spurs is the personnel. Because, like, let's focus on what you were talking about, quickly getting the ball up the field, or at least getting the ball into dangerous positions. And early in the season, we were very reliant on Maddison for doing that, which is fine, because he was playing great, and that's the kind of player he is. And then he got injured, and then I think what we kind of overlook in that is Lo Celso didn't do as good a job at that, but he was doing some of that work. Like, he was making passes and progressing the ball, and it was happening. And I think one of the problems we've had is, like, Maddison, I think rationally, I don't think any of us would have done any differently. When he got back, he got put back in the lineup when he got healthy. And this also, I'm probably getting the timing wrong, but this also coincided with, I think Lo Celso got hurt around the same time. But Maddison has been subpar since he came back, which is understandable. I don't think any of us would blame him. He's admitted it's the worst injury of his career, so there's probably a lot going on there. But you've got that as an issue. And then when you combine it with the fact that, like, you know, I don't know what's exactly going on with Lo Celso. Clearly, if not now, for a while, he was not an option for the club. You still get the sense he's not entirely fit, although maybe he's just not getting used for other reasons. But my point is, we're not getting the level of passing out of the midfield that we were getting until, like, I don't know, mid-January, February. I mean, Maddison's had his moments, but the consistency hasn't been there. So that's, like, one of the many sort of personnel issues we've been dealing with. Because, you know, I think it's easy to forget because we had that injury crisis, and we kind of did, outside the back line, like, a pretty good job of coping with it. And now we're just dealing with some guys who aren't pulling their weight, who aren't in good vein of form, who are, in Charleston's case, not even playing.
And I think that's part of why there's a lot of catastrophizing, is because we had that excuse of all those injuries, and that's why things weren't going well. And now everyone pretty much is fit, you know, maybe fit.
This is the first. But yeah, like, this is maybe the Fulham match, but I think this is the first match where there's absolutely no excuses. Like,
right. We have our guys, and it's still not working. And so I think those are real concerns. And, you know, the other thing systemically, I think, that is maybe an issue, maybe not, is when we do build slowly and we get a lot of guys very high up the pitch, we play very, very suicidally, in that we have Van de Ven at the back and just hope he can run down whatever comes over the top. And that's a very high variance, dangerous way of defending when we're in possession. And sometimes Nicky Van de Ven is going to slip chasing someone back, and then we're fucked. You know, like, it works most of the time, and the ability to get that many guys forward does help us create and really effectively. But when we lose the ball in those scenarios, you know, we're just asking for trouble, and sometimes we find it.
But Van de Ven seems to be more of a problem. I don't want to say problem because he's been a great player this year, but like his problem isn't when he's leaving all that space behind him and he's got to get on his horse and get back. His problem is when the ball starts pinging around the box.
I mean, that was the first goal was everyone chasing back. Udogi, you know, took himself out of the play by diving for a foul, and it was, you know,
the other
2v2.
Isaac goal was he thought he could get across and cover, and he couldn't. I mean, in the box, I mean, not.
Yeah, but it was, I mean, it was a quick, it was a quick break from Poro playing it back into our box. You know, it was a transition moment. It wasn't like it was close, but it wasn't, you know, a set defense kind of moment.
It's, I don't know. Like it's tough because you look at this team and you do, I do think like, God, if we had a tricky winger out there, if we had a better defensive midfield, like I think Basum has become a real problem. You know, like I do think a lot of our issues are personnel based. I don't think all of them are. This is a weird match where I feel like everyone's to blame. Like it's not like Ange got the plan wrong and then the players were just subpar.
Yeah. I mean, it was a ton of individual errors all over the place. And then, that for me is always a question of, well, if there's so many individual mistakes, what is the systemic issue that is leading to that many individual errors? Because odds are 5 people, 7 people, 9 people didn't all decide to just make mistakes today. You know, and so I think this is a reasonable thing to like have a real serious conversation about like what, how much does this expose real limitations or how much of this is something that will just be fixed with time, fixed with a transfer window, fixed with, you know, maybe a little better focus and a few guys having not so bad days, you know,
more regular games. So we have a rhythm to play with. Brian, what, one thing I think has been a little under discussed is I think part of this problem with this team right now is the front line is not producing. Like what do you think of where Spurs are sort of from that perspective in terms of like, because I feel like we've got a bunch of guys. I don't know. Timo is a very high variance player. Obviously, he's not scoring all the time. But we have a bunch of guys where, like, at least in Johnson and Son, where if they don't score a goal, their contributions are a little more limited than, say, you know, a guy like Kane or even a guy like Richarlison who does a lot of hold-up play. But, I mean, what do you think of where our front line is right now?
Yeah, I mean, look, we have a Harry Kane-sized hole in this team, right? And so, you know, the idea was that we were going to recreate him in the aggregate a la Moneyball, right? Like we're going to use Johnson and Son and all the other guys that we had, plus Timo when we added him in January, and we were going to be fine. And it's worked okay, right? Like it hasn't been that bad, but it hasn't also been that great. And I think, you know, the issue in a game like this is we need that guy who's going to be assertive and really take control. Like, you know, Kane dropping deep and trying to get on the ball and start to create. And we just don't really have that anymore. And, you know, while our back line is good in terms of running into space and creating those sort of far post chances, like, you know, Brennan scored against West Ham and you know, those sorts of things, like, it's just not really great at converting all of the touches that we get in the box. And I mean, you know, this is not necessarily related to your question, but like I saw some Who Scored tweet on this week about like the number of touches in the opposing penalty box for all the teams in the Premier League versus the per penalty that's been awarded. And for us, it's like 1,200 or 2,000 touches.
Yeah, I think it was 1,200.
Yeah. It's some ridiculous number whereas like the lowest team is like, it looks like it's about 100 touches in the penalty box per penalty awarded. And so, you know, I think the frustrating thing from an attacking perspective and from the guys that we have is that we are getting touches in the penalty box. Like, even when we play badly, like in this game, we were getting touches inside the penalty box. And just nothing was really coming from them. And I think that was the thing that that we took for granted that Kane gave us. Like, if Kane took several touches inside the penalty box, we were getting either a shot on target or a goal out of that. And that's not quite the case now, because, you know, Son as a striker doesn't really get those touches in that area. Even Richarlison as a striker doesn't get those touches in that area. Like, a lot of those touches come from fullbacks, wingers, you know, those sorts of guys in the penalty area. And it just, especially in this game, it just didn't result in anything. Like some of our best chances fell to Werner, and he just didn't convert. And I'm not trying to fault him, because I think he's been a good, you know, player for us for the time that he's been here. And if we decide to sign him, like, I'm totally okay with that. But, like, we just weren't converting on the touches that we had in the area.
Yeah.
And I think it speaks to, like, the way we're getting, like you said, the way we're getting touches in the penalty box and the kinds of chances we're creating. You know, Son is a guy who's really good in open field and, you know, running with a ball and shooting like that, or at the top of the box, curling one in. He's not great getting the ball in traffic, touching it onto, you know, 1 foot into space and then, you know, whipping a shot. Nobody really is. So when we get the ball in the box, we don't really find those opportunities to, you know, create a shot from, like, little intricate passing in the box. No one's playing nice little 1-2s or through balls to give someone space. It's kind of all either we're running in the open field, someone plays in that low cross across the, you know, 6 yard box, or someone hits in a banger from 18 yards. And, like, those are our goals. Maybe a header, maybe a corner kick, but, like, not especially a lot of those kinds of, yeah.
Especially with Ange is clearly told that some of these players don't shoot from certain positions. Like, you know, we're getting a lot less shit from out wide than I think we're used to. Most football fans would be used to, because it's clearly like you're funneling it into the middle. We've clearly been told that. So, I mean, yeah. But I do think, getting to the penalty thing, it's getting ridiculous. And especially, like, I can't remember exactly. It was Chelsea or United this weekend. Certainly both of those teams, it feels like, you know, like, I mean, they get penalties that make a Brazilian blush. It's just, like, it's ridiculous the shit they get away with when you consider, like, I mean, I don't think we've had a ton of, like, stone cold nailed on penalties shouts this year, but, like, we've had more than our, like, we've had, you know, you see the stuff that Chelsea get, like, it's just like, come on, like, this team sucks and you're giving them that, like,
yeah, man, you got the penalty where someone took a shot outside the box, it deflected off one defender into Adam Smith's hand, which was basically by his side, or he was moving it to his side, you know, he knew nothing about it, and it was just like, that's a handball, that's a fucking penalty. Mm-hmm. You know, I do think the kinds of touches we have in the box, the fact that they're not usually guys getting chopped down, running at full tilt, you know, guys dribbling. It's all much more marginal than that. But, like, teams get marginal calls all the time, and we're not getting those. And that's what's really frustrating. It's like, give me a fucking break.
Every Spurs fan says it's because of the Liverpool result. And I think that was probably true for a week or two. Like, I think there was a penalty call, like, the following week that, like, I just remember watching. It was like, oh, there's no fucking way they're giving us this, even though 2 weeks ago we would have gotten it. I don't think it's that. I think what it is I think Spurs have a reputation as being a very chaotic team. We're up and down the field. We're fast. We're just, like, we're a very loose team. There's a lot of young guys in our team. We play in kind of an unorthodox style for the Premier League. I think we have a reputation as a very chaotic team, and I think that, in addition to the other things we talked about, but I think that's the primary reason we're not getting penalties called for us. And I think we're also, there's probably still a lot in there.
Well, and I want to be clear, like, I really enjoy our style of play. Like, I don't think that there are many Spurs fans that are pining for the days of Antonio Conte and Jose Mourinho. Like, this is the most fun we've had with a Spurs team in a while.
Yeah.
And for all the deficiencies, like the defensive weirdness and, you know, whatever, I'm really happy to watch this team. Like, obviously it sucks that we lose to to Newcastle like this. Like, but on the other hand, we keep doing this at St. James's Park. Like, it's kind of our thing. But this season as a whole has been significantly more enjoyable than any season we've had in, you know, the last 4, 5, 6 years. Like, you know, even the Champions League final season was a real slog for the back half of that season. Like, I don't know if you guys remember, but I remember those podcasts. We hated everything about what was happening in the league, and we were just very excited about what happened in the Champions League. But like, this has been fun. Like, I get it. Look, there's a high level of variance right now, right? Like, we're either really good or we're really bad, and like, there's not an in between. But I think for a rebuilding season, for a season where we said, like, hey, we're just going to be figuring it out. We're implementing a new style. We're going back to our roots, like, whatever. Like, the results are pretty good. Like, we're locked into top five. Like, Newcastle are 10 points behind us. There's basically no way they're catching us. And fifth place probably gets us Champions League. So, like, I'm overall very happy with how this season has gone. And, like, I think I speak for all of us when I say, like, I've enjoyed watching Spurs this season so much more than I've enjoyed the past 2 or 3 seasons. Even with this 4-0 shellacking.
Yeah, I mean, unquestionably, like, the Conte spring was fun. Like, yeah, we'll remember that fondly. But this has been
it was fun, but we're not going to.
It was fun. I don't know. It was fun. Kulishevsky looked like he was going to be a star. I was excited about that. but you're right. I mean, I still believe in Ange. I still love Ange as a man, as a speaker, as a figure for this club. I still think what he's delivered on the pitch in his first season is very impressive. Like Brian said, we're fifth. We could still finish fourth. That's not really outside the realm of possibility. This was always going to be the transition to what's going to come next. And I think he did set the expectations sky high with the way things went at the beginning, but they were never reasonable expectations. And if you went through the rest of the season thinking we were going to, you know, win the league, I think that's on you. That's not really on.
Yeah, we
on
definitely never players. Said that on this yeah, podcast.
That's, I mean, definitely not a thing we said.
I mean, we said it, but I'm not like, oh, fuck, I can't believe we're not winning the league. This is fucking bullshit. Like, that's ridiculous. You know, you should never have expected that. You dream on it, of course. I mean, if you're not dreaming on it, then what's the point? But, you know, I think the preseason expectations were like 6th, 7th and look pretty good doing it and show signs that we're getting better and we're all feeling good. Like, I think if you go back to any preseason chatter, that's where we were. And, you know, we're better than that. And that's great. And I think there's a lot of reasons to believe we will kick on from this, you know, next year. If, you know, by next Christmas, we're still like getting hammered 4-0 away from home for the same stupid mistakes. Yeah, fine. I'm going to be pissed. And
well, and I think a lot of the frustration, or well, at least some of the frustration, comes from, you know, Aston Villa kind of leapfrogging us in a way. And, you know, they're in the second season with their manager, or you know, he came in, you know, and had some time last season to kind of get his ideas across and work with this team. And, you know, we're right there with them. Like, sure, we should probably be ahead of them just on basis of the money we've spent and the players we have. But
so,
like,
should Newcastle, and so should Man U, and so should Chelsea, and, like, fucking none of them are. You know, it's like,
yeah,
I know that's what you're saying, but, like, you know, it's...
I think you guys are both right in that I think we should be really happy with where, I mean, think about it. Who would you rather be going into next season? Would it be us or Villa? I feel a lot better about this Spurs team than I do. I think that Villa team is very close to its ceiling. Now, maybe I'm just being a homer, but I mean, I know I said this a million times last week when I was really drunk, but, you know, I don't think I think this Villa team is really maxing out. You know, they're running up against FFP. They're going to probably have to sell some guys. I'm still like, I still think Emery has his limits, especially in the league. You know, it's, there's a lot to like about where the Spurs team is going. And I think we lose sight of that because I think there is a tendency, and I know we've been sort of banging this drum for the last few weeks, but there's this sort of tendency to like, you want to project things out. You want to see where it's going. Especially when you have a manager who plays kind of a unique system and is kind of a different kind of guy. I think you want to like see where that's going. And I definitely can see, you know, within the head of every Spurs fan, they're like, is this more Pochettino or is this more AVB? Because like both had kind of like start and stop first seasons, like where there was a lot to be desired and there were big questions going into their second season. And, you know, I could see this thought going on in whether consciously or unconsciously in a lot of Spurs fans. And it's, you know, I think it's rational to like, I think there are very rational doubts to have about Ange's system moving forward. For me personally, I think so many of our issues are tied up in personnel that, you know, I'm very optimistic about how we're going to address them. You know, how we're going to move forward with them, because I think, you know, this game looks a lot different with, you know, a winger who can beat his man, with, you know, some guys on the some guys on that forward line who are a little better at keeping the ball, and creating chances. Like, I think there's a lot that you just can fix. A passer in that midfield, you know, there's a lot. Like, so, shit, if Sar's healthy, I think this game looks a lot different. So I think there's a lot to be optimistic about, because I think the approach does generally work. And the problems, you know, like, is this going to be, oh, no, we're being man-marked. What are Spurs going to do? Like, you know, we won't be the first team that needs to figure out how to be a man marking system, you know, which isn't to take anything away from what Eddie Howe and guys like Sean Dyche and, you know, David Moyes have done to us this year. I think those have been very impressive coaching jobs. But at the same time, like, we're not going to be the first team that has to overcome shit like this. So, you know, I think personnel solves a lot of those problems. I'm very optimistic about this team. I'm very hopeful. I think a lot of the problems we're having this year are teething problems, like Brian was saying, and personnel issues. And, you know, I'm not as concerned about Ange's tactical flexibility, even if I think there are games like this where he did not do enough to either adapt or respond to what was going on.
Like, I know this was a bad game, and I know that I was very much the one saying, like, there are real questions that we have to ask ourselves, but, like, this is a very good season. Like, this is stupid to be talking like this so many weeks on this pod, is that like, oh, well, you know, there's real problems, but we're going to get better. Like, we're fucking like, we're very good. You know, like, we all want to be up there with, like, you know, the three teams fighting for the title, but like, it's fine that we're not, you know, this is very good by the benchmark of all of Spurs seasons of the last, you know, 20 years. This is a very good one. So calm down.
So I want to take a moment to address an issue, a real serious issue that I think really speaks to the lack of trust between our fan base and the front office. And it really speaks to, I think, the problems of modern football in terms of how fans are constantly betrayed and abused by their front offices, which is the Tope Kits. Clearly, the cause of, at least, like, you know, I think we would be winning the league if Tottenham weren't so cavalier with their fashion choices and foisting these upon you know, and a fan base that deserves better and deserves to be respected. Ben, do you have any thoughts on this travesty?
I mean, they're abominable kits, and I mean, they look terrible on TV. I've heard they look terrible in person, especially against Newcastle. Like, the color contrast was just non-existent, and I think the players go out there and they see themselves looking like this, and they can't play with self-respect and dignity. They can't hold their heads up high and be proud of themselves as professional athletes. You know, they look like idiots.
But isn't it weird that the color contrast is weird? Because, like, Newcastle are black and white, and this kid is, like, whatever, taupe and navy.
Yeah, I mean, black, like, and white kind of looks like a grayish kind of blur.
But, like, it's very weird that, like, these kits cause such a weird, like, blur on the, well, on they're the screen. And,
like, you look at them and it feels like your eye's adjusting to another color, but it never adjusts. And you're just sort of like, you're waiting for the color to change. It's such an ugly, and I am a big fan of an ugly kit. Like, I loved our wetsuit look from a few years ago. Love a good tacky set of colors. Like, you know, just like, I could absolutely dig it. But, like, man, like, I feel like if you're going to go tacky, go for a bright, like, go for bright contrast. Don't do this. Like Spurs love, like, ever since I've been a Spurs fan, every couple of years we start fucking around with neon yellow kits. Like, just fucking do that. Like, or neon green.
Like, I mean, you know, just look, we've had one of some those fun third kits. Like, the green one from a few years ago was nice that I you know, like, the purple one from years back was great. Like, you know, you have some options. Like, the kits don't always have to be, like, just like, so home and away, like, white and navy, like, that's pretty easy. Like, but like the third one, like, purple and then or green or what, but like this,
even yellow, we always wore yellow in the 70s. Like,
honestly, even those weird, ugly brown ones were better than this. Like, I just,
those weird, beautiful brown ones, I agree.
No, those browns are horrible. But,
gorgeous.
But like, this is just like, it's just such a weird color. Like, no one wants this.
What's been amazing about this to me, and I think we've not every game we've worn them has been a disaster, but we have happened to wear them in a couple disasters. And what I feel like is very, very funny, and I'm not singling anyone out. I heard the Extra Inch was talking about this. And we just alluded to it too, with like the contrast not working and our eyes sliding off. Is it hard for them to read it? And I don't think anyone's being serious, but a lot of like serious Spurs fans, not like, you know, Hotspur related 69 or whatever. But like a lot of serious Spurs fans, when something goes wrong in these kits, have like, I'm surprised how often they try to like talk about like, well, is there an actual, these kits are so ugly, is there an actual problem? Are they actually affecting our play, as opposed to just like, oh, they're ugly, get them out of here? And I don't know why, but I find it very funny that this reaction keeps happening.
They are. They're actually affecting our play. I don't know for a fact that all 8 of our losses have come while we were wearing them, but I'm pretty confident that's true.
Well, we did. We beat Luton wearing them. So,
oh, I mean, not, well, we beat Luton.
Yeah, by one nil up by down 10 men. So maybe that's what happened. You know, Bissouma got like tote poisoned.
See, this, that could be
the
it.
Same sense. Yeah, there we go. Truly, truly a hideous kit, and I really hope we do better next year.
We still have Nike, so it's unlikely.
You know, I don't know. Like, I'm disappointed. Like, the leaks, there were some leaks about our home and away kits next year, and it's like, I don't know. Like, doing a white home kit is hard. There's only so much you can do with it. But like, I feel like Under Armour did a decent job of like putting navy on it somewhere. So like, oh, we're gonna have navy shoulders this year. We're gonna put a sash on it the other year. Even Nike at first did a good. They put like a collar on it or something. Like, just fucking like, I don't know. Like, I do like every few years I like a really clean all white kit. But like, I don't want it every year because it's kind of boring. Even if it doesn't like again, it's high floor, but it's a low ceiling. I feel like so. You know,
the leak, I think, showed us having like a powder green kit with like an old crest on there. I don't know. I don't hate the idea.
I like the idea of a third kit with our old, with an old crest on it. I do like that. I think, you know, that I like Chelsea always rolls out a kit every few years with like, you know, an old crest on it. And it always looks pretty good for a Chelsea kit. So like, I don't know. I like that idea. I'm not sure I like it on like a weird green monstrosity.
What else you got?
Yeah, some other stuff happened this week that I want to talk about. This happens every few years. I am amazed. So look at Arsenal's fixture list this week. They played Aston Villa this weekend, and they are playing Bayern Munich in the Champions League. We are recording this on a Tuesday night, so they're playing Bayern
Munich, who officially are not winning their 12th straight, yes, Bundesliga title.
Good work, Harold. But my point is, like, these are games that, in theory, Spurs could benefit from Arsenal winning. And I'm always a little shocked at how many pundits, I shouldn't be because these people are morons, try to seriously argue that Spurs should want Arsenal to win because it benefits them in some way. Brian, I'll start with you. Is there either of these games that you want to see Arsenal win, that you wanted or want to? I guess because one's past and one's future.
No,
but
absolutely not. No.
So it doesn't matter to you that the Champions League, if they win the Champions League, it'll help our coefficient, maybe make fifth more of a Champions League spot. Or if they beat Aston Villa, it would make it easier for us to finish fourth. You don't want either of those things to happen.
No, because, you know, it's still Arsenal. Like, you know, I think I've talked at length about how I think the rivalry with Chelsea is more antagonistic in recent years. But, like, I don't want Arsenal to succeed. Like, you know, them being able to say, like, oh, we won the league or we won the Champions League. Like, I don't want that. Like, look, obviously they're going to finish ahead of Spurs this year, just like they did last year. And, like, them having their fucking stupid St. Totteringham's Day thing is, like, great for you guys. But, like, I don't want them to have any other success outside of that. Like,
or even that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want them to have that. But, like, I'm resigned to the fact that it's happening this year, obviously. Like, you know, I want Harry Kane and Bayern Munich to, like, destroy them. And you know, the same thing with Villa, who, like, look, we're in competition with Villa, but, like, I wanted Ollie Watkins to score those goals. Like, there was no part of me that was like, no, don't do it. I want to finish ahead of Villa. Like, absolutely. I wanted Villa to beat Arsenal.
Yeah, I want to qualify for the Champions League. The Champions League is fun, but there is no amount of joy I'm going to get from the Champions League that would overcome Arsenal winning the Champions League or winning the league title. Like, just zero. Zero, zero amount of joy that will compare to that. That is the absolute worst case scenario. And yeah, maybe if Arsenal gets us the coefficient for fifth to go to the Champions League, we could win it next year. And that'd be great, but we'd always be winning it the year after Arsenal fucking won it the first time, and that would not be fun. So we can qualify for the Champions League next year. We can win the Champions League the year after. Depriving Arsenal of joy and success is as important as our own success.
I hate Arsenal so much. I kind of agree with Brian, and I think the Chelsea rivalry has had more juice more recently. But, like, you know, you just Arsenal have to go on a nice run of form, and you remember how much you just fucking hate them between the players. Like, I think it's a loathsome squad. I think it's a loathsome manager. They have loathsome fans. Sorry, Ben. But, you know, they're so fucking annoying. The only circumstance I ever want Arsenal to win a game is if it's going to, like, fucking help us win a league. Like, if they win something and that helps us secure the league, then fucking great. Like, good for them. But otherwise, don't want to see it happen. Like, I don't give a shit. If missing out on the Champions League is the price I have to pay to watch Arsenal, like, not finish first, I will pay that every day of the week and twice on Sunday.
Right. I mean, if Arsenal were already out of the title race, then sure, I would be happy with them to beat our rival for the top four, because them finishing third or second is not an actual accomplishment. So I don't care if they get that. I care if they win something tangible that is real success. And that can't happen. I will happily, if it comes down to it, I would happily root for Postecoglou to throw the game against Man City. Like, 100%. Yes.
I don't care if what it costs us. Like,
no question.
Yep. Fuck it.
Lose, like, that game.
Like, let's pack our bags, fellas. We're going to Moldova next year. Like, I do not give a shit. Like, I do not want Arsenal to win the league. And I think it's, I don't know. I think it's, like, I don't think it's a modern football thing. I think it's just people overthink this shit. It's just like, no, I don't want to, like, half of the fun of sports is, like, seeing people you dislike being miserable. Like,
right. I mean, that's the probably failure of your enemies is yeah. Yes. Important.
Yes. I don't know. Like, that's certainly short of my own team succeeding, like, what I get the most joy of in sports. So, like, I don't know. Probably doesn't say something nice about my character, but I think it's true of, like, 90% of sports fans. So,
I mean, what's the likelihood at this point that fifth doesn't get Champions League? I know last week in the Champions League was, like, bad for coefficient. But, like, I still think we're pretty safe in terms of fifth getting into the Champions League.
I think it depends if the German teams make a run, I think.
Yeah.
Which Bayern could. I don't think Dortmund. I mean, I don't know. Dortmund beat Atletico today, so who the fuck knows. But, I mean, I think, you know, again, I don't care. Like, I just don't. I don't want to get into the Champions League off the back of Arsenal. Like, City, if City want to go win the whole thing, like, I don't like Manchester City, but. You know, like,
they've already done it. You know, the shine's off.
They've already done it. They're so good. They're just like that monster, like just like United was when I became a fan. Like they're a monster team that I have general enmity for, but I don't really care. You know, like who, like, because there aren't, a part of that's because they fucking City fans don't exist. There's like five grandfathers who are real City fans who all sit around and would gladly trade their European Cup to sit in the rain at Main Road again and like lose to Ipswich. You know, so like, you know, who cares? I don't know. Like City wins, it's like fucking shitty. It's probably shitty for the world and world football, but like, doesn't personally make my life any worse. Like Arsenal or Liverpool winning it in different proportions. Yeah, that there's, you know, I'll get annoyed by a lot of people I don't like. So
exactly. Like these fucking like evil Petro states have like ruined so much in football already. Like they have destroyed the competitiveness. They have just done awful sports washing projects. It's all awful. The only thing that they haven't taken from me yet is my ability to hate the teams that I hate and root for the failure of the people I want to fail. And if they take that from me too, because I have to take some stance against, you know, their nation state taking over football, then they've taken everything from me. And what do I have left? Why do I even fucking care? So.
And you like, know. You know, say what you want about how many journalists, I guess that's the Newcastle, but say what you want about what Abu Dhabi's done and all that shit and how awful City are, but they don't own the Boston Red Sox. So, you know, really, who's the monster here? You know, or the LA Rams. I don't know. They're kind of the Manchester City of the NFL. I don't know. But like, fuck them. Like, come on. Like, you know, like Ben said, like, This is what sports are about, like taking joy in the misery of your enemies.
Like, their success caused me like intellectual and maybe some moral pain, but it doesn't cause me like emotional pain. And that is more important to me as a fan of a sport, personally.
Yeah, when you remarry in a few years to a Manchester City fan, maybe you'll feel differently.
I mean,
after Arsenal's title win.
Right. And like Man City not winning the league this year, not winning the Champions League this year, is like, that's not like derailing that project. You know, like it's not. But Arsenal not winning a title, like that's an important failure.
We cannot allow Mikel Arteta's reputation to be sports washed by Arsenal Football Club's terrible football with their really good set pieces. So, you know, like really, who's the true monster here?
Exactly.
We were talking about this a little bit, and I know this is a conversation we haven't had it for a few years actually, but Europa League versus Champions League. I mean, I think we'd all rather be in the Champions League, but I mean, how would you feel if Spurs ended up in the Europa League next year?
I'm totally fine with that. Like, you know, look, I still think fifth is going to be good enough to get us into those Europa League qualifying places. And I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that we catch Aston Villa and wind up finishing four. But I don't know. I hold some like romantic notions of the Europa League in that, like, you know, you go to different places and, you know, you get to see teams that you wouldn't normally see. And in theory, it should be a lot of fun. In practice, you wind up losing bullshit games to PSV. Or, you know, because Dean Parrott misses a penalty, or, you know, I don't know. I think in terms of the project that Postecoglou has undertaken here and that Spurs are in the middle of, it doesn't matter like which European competition we're in. Like, it's going to be a challenge for the squad no matter what. Obviously, we prefer the Champions League, but like, I think the Europa League is fun. Like, I'm not gonna pretend I don't want to be in the Champions League, but like, I'm not gonna turn my nose up at the Europa League.
Yeah, I also share some romantic notions about the Europa League. I mean, I remember when qualifying for it was a big deal for us. It was like the first time in a really long time it had happened. I remember watching the first time we made the quarterfinals, where we went out to Juan de Ramos's Sevilla. Like, that was a really fun journey, even if it ended with us hiring Juan de Ramos. You know, I remember the other quarterfinal run we went on. I think that was the year Harry Kane broke out. Was that year? I don't know.
No, it was under AVB. It was
okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, another good one. Plus the one where Harry Kane broke out and scored his hat trick and played keeper, and Eric Lamella gave us a Rabona. Like, we have had some very fun Europa League moments. We have also had some terrible moments where, like, we crashed out of a competition to a manager who's in jail or whatever. Maybe that was the Conference League, but like,
no,
that was the Europa League. Yeah, it's been dog shit. It's like the kind of competition we always think we can phone in with our backups, and then we get there and they're like, oh, our backups kind of suck. Like, we can't really do that. I guess we got to use our good players. And it's like, fuck, everyone's tired. And up, oh, Harry Kane got hurt. That sucks. Like, yes, I know we've lived through that and that's terrible, but it might not be. Ange could play the kids, and maybe Jamie Donnelly and Mikey Moore are fucking fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
I got a fucking bridge to sell you if you believe that one.
No, I think, oh, go ahead. No, go finish ahead. Your
thought. Okay. I mean, this is my problem, and I think you guys have circled around this point, but I'll put a pin in it. You know, intellectually, I agree with both of you. I think the Europa League could be really fun. I think it is a fun competition. I would highly recommend, if you're not busy on a, I guess in Europe, it'd be night, so it's a different story. But in America, you know, if you're not busy on a Thursday afternoon when the Europa League and Conference League matches are going, throw on the Golazo channel. Watch the, whatever they call the red zone in Europe. You know, like, just watch highlights, because it's fun as shit, especially early in the competition. There's just goals every 3 seconds. Sure, they're from like three Eastern European teams that you've like never heard of and couldn't pronounce, but like, you know, it's just a goal a minute. It's a lot of fun. I think it's a competition that English teams should take more seriously. Problem is all intellectual, because I have like two, and admittedly, I was started being a fan in 2010. I have like two good memories of the Europa League. It's like Lamella's Rabona, and like, I don't know, there's probably like Lamella hitting a free, or Bale hitting a free kick against Inter in the Europa League. Like, it's just, it's very, maybe that was Dembele. See, I can't even remember. Intellectually, in theory, I feel like the Europa League could be a really fun thing. The problem is, as a Spurs fan, is when we get to the point in the competition where, like, you expect Spurs to start asserting themselves. They do not assert themselves, and they frequently do not assert themselves over teams with the greatest amount of respect we are much better than. You know, it's never like, ooh, we played Inter Milan and we kind of weren't up to it. It's more like we played a Croatian team whose manager's in jail, and played, we somehow blew a 3-0 lead.
It was
a
Romanian team, first of all. But
no, it was Zagreb, wasn't it?
I thought, yeah, it was Bucharest.
No. It was Dinamo Zagreb.
I don't think that's accurate.
Go look it up. I'm right. I know I'm right about this. My point is, we play teams like Basel. And I know these teams have good players. I know they deserve to be in that part of the competition. My point is, we never assert ourselves. We never look dangerous. We never look like we're going to run through and win. We never have a run in the Europa League like Arsenal seems to have. Like Liverpool,
United, Chelsea. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We never seem to put together a run where we look dangerous. And that's what I hate about the Europa League. The funny thing about the Champions League is, for all the struggles we kind of have in that, like, I have tons of really fun memories from the Champions League, and not just 2019. Like, we always seem to put even Conte last year, which was like awful and a grind. Like, that Marseille game was super fun. Like, at the end of the group stages,
that was not a good Champions League campaign.
It was not a good Champions League campaign. That's what I mean. But like, that Marseille game was a lot of fun, and like,
I mean, like, Champions League matters in a way the Europa League doesn't. So you can celebrate a shitty group stage, yes, victory over Marseille.
But we put together more exciting moments, more exciting games in the Champions League. I don't know if it's because we just try. My point is, that exciting, like, ooh, it's back and forth and everyone cares and who's getting out of the group. And then, you know, Højbjerg hits like a banger as a last minute winner to put us through. We haven't had a moment that fun in the Europa League, at least not while I've been a fan. You know,
I mean, Harry Kane scoring a hat trick and playing keeper was a very fun day.
I mean, yeah, but that was against, like, you know,
asterisk triple
HJK buttfuck, you know, or whoever it was.
Yep, that's what it is. You're right. You remember it better. No, I mean, look, I think part of it is, when we qualify for the Europa League, we're not a very good team because we qualified for the Europa League. We qualify for the Champions League, we were a very good team. You know, we're teams on the rise who played really well. So that's part of it. And like, I think for next season, we're talking about, like, can we manage a league season and not like kill ourselves because we lost 4-0 to Newcastle? Either we're going to fix ourselves and get good, in which case, fine. Champions League will be there in a year. let's go win the league next year because we're good, or like have a very good run in the league because we're good. Great. Or, you know, Ange isn't always cracked up to be and we suck. And then we're going to go to the Champions League and suck in the Champions League. And that's not fun either. Like, being in the Champions League is better. Of course, I want to be in the Champions League. There's no question. But not being in the Champions League, again, because Arsenal specifically failed, is great, is fine.
Yeah, that is true. We agree on that. I just think I would like the Europa League to have been more fun for Spurs than it typically
is. I would
is.
Like us to be really good next year and then manage to win a Europa League league double. I think that would be a super fun season.
Why stop?
And then go win the Champions League next
year. Win the FA Cup. We can win the FA Cup too while we're at it.
Yeah. Yeah. And the League Cup.
Quadruple. Yeah, there we go. It's just, you know, I don't know. I worry about the load of the Europa League. I mean, to me, like, weirdly, because I do think Ange has talked about this pretty intelligently. It's about progress. And I can see the argument of, like, the Europa League gives you an opportunity to, like, try out new formations, like, give guys who aren't getting run the team a run out, like, sort of blood young or new players. And I do get that. To me, like, as part of that, like, why I'd like to be in the Champions League is I just think it's going to be easier to attract better quality player. Like, if you want to go get a Nico Williams, I think that gets very hard if we're not in the Champions League. So if you want to take a big swing,
Champions League. I really liked Ange's answer to that question, honestly. And he was like, if you're coming here for the Champions League, you're coming here for the wrong reasons. So, like, you need to come here because you believe in what we're putting together, and 1 year in and out of the Champions League shouldn't be your deciding factor.
You're right.
I think he's right. But I think I think you're right that, like, obviously players care about that, and if they see you as a Champions League club, they're going to be more inclined to believe in said project. But, like, we attract very good players all the time while we're out of the Champions League, and we sign shitty players while we're in the Champions League. So, you know, I think the real thing that the Champions League has given us over the years that have been very important is Champions League money, which is hugely important. The good news for us is our revenues are in incredible shape, especially compared to some of our competitors. And I don't think the Champions League cash is make or break for us in a way that it has been. Like, we're fine. We can spend money. And if Ange is doing well and Levy is willing to back his project, regardless of whether we finish in the Champions League or not, I think that's going to be much more telling about the kind of players we can sign and what the transfer window is going to look like. So, yeah, the Champions League is fun because it's fun. It's not fun because it's not important because it's important.
Yeah, yeah. And obviously, I don't think any of us realistically expect us to, like, win the Champions League next year. Like, I think there's going to be a lot of teething problems when we get there, whenever that happens. But yeah, I would like us to be in the Champions League, not at the cost of Arsenal winning the fucking title. Like, fuck them. You know, go let Villa bore everyone to death in Europe next year if that's the price we need to pay to keep them out of the fucking title.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well said. Well said.
Amen.
Word.
Well said. On that note, I think it's time to wrap things up. Ben, where can people find you designing taupe level type clothing?
Yeah, Ben, where are you designing
top clothing? Yeah, where can you find your top clothing, hon?
I'm interested in hearing this answer.
I'm not even that drunk this week, man. I don't know what my excuse is.
You can find me on Twitter at Comrade Spurs.
Brian, where can people find you skiing up a storm?
Yeah, you can find me on X or Twitter, whatever you want to call it, at... Brian_Ashlock. That's Brian with a Y. I almost said Comrade Spurs again.
You can find me on Twitter at Skipjack0079. You can find our podcast at WDR Podcast. That's WDR as in We Leave the Radio. For Ben, for Brian, and of course for Brett Rambo, I've been your host, Greg. Come on, you Spurs, and enjoy your lunch.